Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 9th of February. It's All Things Political Monday at 9, and today we'll be looking at the stimulus package and other issues that you may want to bring forward. But I would imagine just the stimulus alone is worthy of an hour conversation. We have two guests with us today. We'll be looking at the package that has been debated in the Senate and is scheduled to be voted on tomorrow, and how to reconcile that with the House, why there seems to be so little bipartisan support for this bill, why the president is going on the road to Indiana and to Florida to talk more about the stimulus package, and he's giving a press conference tonight, which we will be carrying here on the Ideas Network at 7 o'clock. We have two guests with us today to talk about all of this, and welcome your calls at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, Professor Alexander Lamas, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University, has been with us many times before. Professor Lamas, thanks for joining us again.
My pleasure.
And also joining us from Milwaukee is Professor Abdur Chaudhry. He's a professor of economics at Marquette University and chief economist at Capital Market Consultants. Professor Chaudhry, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me on your program.
Our pleasure. Let's start with the meaning of stimulus. Professor Lamas, let's start with you. Does stimulus mean spending?
Well, that's certainly an important part of it. I mean, the idea is to get money in the pockets of citizens and have them spend so that the entire machinery of the economy will percolate and get moving. But your economist guess can probably take a better shot at that.
Professor Chaudhry?
Yes. At this point, given where we are right now, if you are talking about stimulus and, you know, ask the question which one would give a, you know, better jump start to the economy, I would say spending, a dollar spending would have a greater impact on the economy than, let's say, a tax cut of $1.
Mm-hmm. Why is it that there is so little Republican support? We're looking at three senators, if they vote the way we think they're going to vote tomorrow, for this bill. Professor Lamas?
I'm sorry, you say why do we have those three Republican senators?
Well, we could take it that way, too, but why don't we have more?
Oh, why don't we have more? Yes, that's a very good question. And President Obama came into office talking a great deal about bipartisanship and reaching out to Republicans. He went up to Capitol Hill in his first week, met with leaders. But I think, you know, the Republican leadership has taken a position that in their interest, it's better to oppose now, because if the plan fails, they can come back in the next election and attempt to paint the Democrats as failures and hope to get back into power, first in the Congress in 2 years and then in the presidency in 4 years. I'm not, you know, sure that that's playing well with the general public, but we'll see. It's really a high stakes game right now, and it's fascinating. It is fascinating to watch.
Would you agree with the assessment that we're in a tailspin here, and it is a crisis situation, Professor Chaudhry, and Congress better do something, and the American people want them to do something, and now?
Yes, I agree, and let me explain why. Let's ask the question, why do we need this stimulus package? Now, if you look at consumer spending, which basically drives the economy, 70% of total spending in this country comes from consumption expenditure. Now, consumption expenditure has declined by about, I would say, 2.5% in the fourth quarter of 2008. And consumers are not spending money because of lack of confidence, because of uncertainty in the economy. So the question is, where do you get the money to jumpstart the economy? That's where the government needs to step in. So I think the stimulus package is required in order to jumpstart the economy and, you know, sort of change the economic, the direction that the economy is going to right now.
And is this a make-or-break situation for the Democrats, Professor Lamas, that their success, their future success, is highly dependent on the success of whatever kind of bill we wind up with?
Yes, it's very important, and we will have a bill. I don't think that's in doubt. Some of the details are still in doubt, but the breakthrough in the Senate that we referred to earlier of the three Republican senators coming up with their Democratic majority, coming up with a compromise, I think ensures that there will be a big stimulus bill. Now we're going into, of course, the period of negotiation between the House and the Senate, because the two plans differ. But there's going to be a bill, and I think, you know, the next question becomes, of course, how well it will work, and that I think is a big question mark. And mm-hmm. The economists are all across the board. You have some who are saying that this, even with the stimulus, it may not be enough to get us out of this deep recession.
What do you think about that, Professor Chaudhary?
The stimulus package, I think, will give, as I said, a jump start in the economy. Now, what needs to be done is we have to see what proportion of this money is spent in the first 18 months, and that is important. Now, the Congressional Budget Office basically estimated that about 62% of the money will be spent in the first 18 months, because that is where you'll get, you know, increase in jobs and, you know, sort of take the economy in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Do you, when both of you look at, and maybe there's a substantial difference between the Senate bill and the House bill, a lot of the Republican discontent with this seem to be on, this is not stimulating, this is really helping a lot of government programs, spending on government programs that won't do very much for the economy. Did you see any of that in either of the bills, Professor Lamas?
It's hard for me to know, which of the government programs that we're going to spend on will be more stimulative than others. But there's no question that the Democratic majority and President Obama is leading that to some extent, even though the bill did originate in the House, that the Democratic majority is moving now with this stimulus bill to push forward their agenda for transforming the country, the kinds of issues that were talked about extensively in the campaign, mm-hmm. Investment in energy conservation measures, a whole host of things are there. And the Republicans, they don't like that. That's not their agenda. I mean, John McCain is one of, if not the point person, opposing this plan in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you heard, President Obama at one point say, well, you folks need to realize we won the election.
Right.
And they do have the votes, especially now in the Senate, that they have those three Republicans, the two senators from Maine and Arlen Specter from Pennsylvania. But as for, you know, the tax cuts that are in there, I'd be very interested in hearing, what our economist guest thinks about those.
Yeah, now, coming back to the bill, I do agree that there are a number of perks in the bill that we could do without, but that's politics in Washington, as we all know. But having said that, if you look at the substantive portion of the package, I think that will help to stimulate the economy. Now, you asked a question about the difference between the House version and the Senate version. The main difference that I see there is the money that is going to the states. Now, the Senate version basically reduced significantly the money that has previously the House wanted to go to the states. And second is the tax cut. The Senate version increased significantly the tax cut. It's, I think, if I remember the figures correctly, it's $281 billion tax cut in the Senate version and about $182 billion in the House version. So that's sort of the major difference between the two.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine the president will talk a little bit about this issue tonight. What about the tax cuts to the states? We've heard so many governors that, and Wisconsin is no exception, that states really are hurting here in substantial ways. He got more support, the president, from Republican governors than he's getting from Republican senators. Will he push for more money to go back to the states, do you think?
Absolutely, and we do know that out in the states, we're seeing this crisis is not always so apparent to people in Washington, but it's serious, and we'll have to deal with it after this bill and in other measures too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I
unless
agree.
The economy quickly bounces back and the state revenues build up.
Yeah, I agree. I think President Obama tonight will ask for more money going to the states than what the Senate has asked for. If you look at California, for example, literally they have stopped paying their bills because they don't have the cash. So states do need money.
And what about this idea? I'm just wondering how this will play out in the years ahead. The president was very, very conscious of governing or starting off his administration in a bipartisan fashion, at least symbolically, going to the Hill, meeting with leaders, having people over for the Super Bowl, cocktail parties, et cetera. What role the Republicans down the road here? If the philosophies are so different, will he eventually just have to take the bull by the horns and push things through because he's got a majority here?
Well, I think he's doing that right now, and it started with his talk in Virginia the other day to the House Democrats who are having a conference, and he will continue that. That's just part of the nature of our two-party system. But on the other hand, I think a lot of people welcome the idea that he's brought that. We can disagree, but we don't have to constantly be disagreeable about it. We can have personal relationships across parties. And he said time and time again, I'm looking for good ideas wherever I can find them. And I think that's a political winner. I think a lot of people want that. You know, people who don't follow politics that closely, they have the general feeling that what the politicians need to do is work together for the common good, and they don't really care for the backbiting and the other things that necessarily come with our complex party system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think President Obama has tapped to this sentiment in the general public that, you know, they don't want any more bickering in Washington. They want the leaders to work together for the benefit of the people.
Right. But you got leaders who are not really working together. So
yeah.
What about that? That doesn't seem to be working out, does it?
Well, I think we've just begun. You know, the president is not quite 3 weeks in office. And, of course, today, you know, not only is he going to give that primetime press conference, but he's, of course, going to Indiana to stump for his program and then come back. And he'll talk about, I'm sure, what he's the particular circumstances in Elkhart, Indiana, where he will be visiting, where they have enormously high unemployment. And then tomorrow he's going to fly off to Florida and do basically the same thing. And both of these states, of course, are red states that he carried. In the case of Indiana, he carried amazingly, mm-hmm. because Indiana has been a solidly Republican state since 1964. But I think it's certainly no reason to think that the outreach on a personal level that he has started shouldn't continue. For example, on the flight to Indiana today, he's taking a Michigan Republican congressman with him on the plane. I think he's taking six congressmen. And he's going to, of course, be lobbying that Republican for that person for votes. And when that story gets out, people say, well, that's a good thing to do.
Yeah. We have a lot of people who want to speak to both of you, so we'll take phone calls in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. It's All Things Political, as it always is, Monday at 9. And our guests are Professor Alexander Lamas, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University, and Professor Abdur Chaudhury, who's a Professor of Economics at Marquette University and Chief Economist at Capital Market Consultants. 800-486-8655 is the number, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls in a moment. Just a reminder that Wisconsin Public Radio will be carrying President Obama's primetime press conference tonight. This will be live anchored coverage starting at 7 o'clock tonight, the first primetime news conference for Mr. Obama. And Melissa Block will be hosting the coverage. White House correspondent Don Gagne, economics correspondent, will be there as well. And so all of that's coming up tonight. Also likely to contribute, White House correspondent Scott Horsley from the White House after the press conference. And also reaction from Capitol Hill. So listen tonight, starting at 7. We go to phone calls for our guests, starting with Zach. Okay, Zach, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to express the fact that I am frustrated by what I see as the lack of discussion within the mainstream media regarding the legitimacy of supply-side economics and how it applies to the stimulus package. history and reality show us that no matter how many millions of dollars in tax cuts you give to corporations or very wealthy individuals, that is not going to induce them to expand their product line and make more jobs. Demand is what is going to create more jobs. Yet this, what I see as a failed policy, is believed by millions and millions of non-wealthy people and by a good chunk of the Republican Party. And I wish that this discussion would go further questioning this policy and this strategy.
Professor Chaudhary, you want to start?
Sure. Basically, if you look at the situation that we are in, it's a dire situation that we are in. We do need something that will work and work fast. So I think in that case, instead of having this supply-side tax cut that we tried beginning in the 1980s, I think what we need to do is need to create jobs. And the easiest way at this point to create jobs would be to sort of the government come up with some infrastructure projects and other type of projects that we see in the stimulus package. So I think this stimulus package will work much faster and in a more focused way than having supply-side tax cuts.
Mm-hmm. Well, it also is true, and this is a big thing, I think, that we've tried that for 8 years now, haven't we?
Yes.
It doesn't seem to have been very successful, so you would think that it would demand that we go in another direction.
Yes. As I said earlier, we have tried it for the last 8 years and see where it has taken us. Look at the housing market, look at the financial market, and look at the labor market. So basically, I think now it's time to try something else, something that might work.
Mm-hmm.
We have to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you missed the question, but just your response to historically during periods like this, whether or not tax breaks will work, Professor Lamis, or have we learned from even the last 8 years, which means that we need to go in another direction? It didn't work.
Yes. No, I mean, that's a great question, and there are the mixed answers. I mean, there, you go back to the Kennedy tax cut of 1963, which I think was passed in 1964 by Johnson after Kennedy's assassination, and the economists are still battling over that. There's a school of thought that says, well, that was really the beginning of the big boom then. And then there are others who say just the opposite, that in fact that was a giveaway to the well-to-do, and that the prosperity that began after 1964 had other factors propelling it. So I'm not in a strong position to know the answer. But the two parties will certainly continue to debate that vigorously. I hope that we can get more scholarly answer to it.
We go to Quamar from Manitowoc. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about the comment one of your guests, I think Professor Chaudhary, mentions that in the stimulus package, the spending part is the one which he thinks would be probably more beneficial. And I would like that he can explain why that would be the case, because as a common man, I think the spending and probably the overspending is the reason that got us here where we are now. And if you are given free money, everybody, including myself, would love to spend. But explain to me, please, how would it stimulate the economy, especially in the long run and permanent basis, rather than a short-term 5 days of a period where I have the extra money from Uncle Sam and enjoy it, and then we are in the same situation. And if I can add a little more, then I will listen the response of the air. Is it not that we should look into any different kind of economic model? Is it not an indication of a failure of the capitalism itself? If it has been 30 years, 40 years ago in a Great Depression, and now the same cycle is being repeated, that makes me to wonder whether it's a failure of the model we are living on the economical basis. And I will take the response out there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your call.
Thanks for the question. Basically, the reason I think the stimulus package will work is because look at the spending. What the spending will do will have a multiplier effect. Now, take investment infrastructure spending, for example. A dollar spent on infrastructure will create additional jobs, will create additional spending. So it will have a multiplier effect. And it's not a one-year or two-year project. Once you start the project, then the multiplier effect will continue, even though the project will end, but the multiplier effect will continue, and that will have a positive impact on the economy. Now, coming to the second part of the question, do we need a different economic model? I think that's up for debate. But if you look at the capitalist system, if you look at, you know, the period after the Great Depression, we did have recessions and expansions. So this is nothing new. This is part of the system that you, part of the process that you'll see in a capitalist system. So whether the system works or not, it's a, I think it's a different question.
Could we go back to these infrastructure projects and these shovel-ready projects the president keeps referring to, Professor Lamas? Do we have enough jobs ready to go for the increasing numbers of people who are becoming unemployed in this country?
Yes, I think so. I mean, there are many public works projects that are ready to go, and then there are others that we ought to be investing in. Sometimes you hear mention of high-speed rail. I mean, that could be an enormous expenditure that would have great benefit to the society down the road, taking the pressure off of airports. You know, the need to constantly build airports or have bigger and bigger planes. If we had one of these maglev systems connecting all of our major cities 20 years from now, I think that would be a great economic benefit to the country. Plus, employing hundreds of thousands of people.
We go to John from Milwaukee next. Hi, John.
Hi. One of the side effects that will come from the stimulus package, I believe, is inflation, and nobody's talking about that. But there's actually a very positive side of the inflation that the stimulus package will provide, and that is one of the causes of the recession was the real estate bubble that we had. And when that real estate bubble popped, mortgages started to exceed the value of the houses. Now, the stimulus package will, in the future, be causing inflation, and the inflation will then, in effect, cause the value of the houses to go up above what the mortgages are, and that should be a positive effect on the banking community, I think. What do your guests believe?
Professor Chowdhury, you want to start?
At this point, I'm not concerned about inflation, basically. If you look at the price level, you know, it's really low. Now, it's true that maybe a year from now, price level will start to increase given the amount of money that has been pumped into the economy. That's where I think the Federal Reserve Bank has to step in, maybe raise the interest rate sometime in 2010 to keep inflation under control. I agree with the caller that at that point, in let's say in 2010, as price level starts to increase, house values will go up and will be higher than the mortgage price that we have right now.
Professor Lamas, you want to comment on the housing?
No, actually, but I would like to comment on a broader political question tied in with all of this.
Mm-hmm.
The question of where we should be spending. Well, are you still there?
We're here.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I think we need to keep in mind the broader scheme is what happened during the Depression and Roosevelt's leadership. There's a lot of debate about that, as you're hearing. People have said, well, all that spending of the New Deal didn't get us out of the Depression. It wasn't until the massive deficit spending of World War II that got us out. And maybe Professor Chowdhury can comment in a second on that whole argument. But what is missed by that argument is that President Roosevelt and the Democrats, by doing what they did, by coming to the aid of a lot of people who were hurting, by instituting fundamental structural changes, Social Security, labor law reform, a whole host of other initiatives using the federal government to regulate markets and other things, in doing that, the Democratic Party was propelled into majority status in the North, where it hadn't been before. That's what we call the New Deal realignment. Because all those things that were going on were wildly popular for among the people who had less and were really hurting by the Depression. And I think you have something similar to that going on now. So you don't hear that debate being articulated just the way I did, but I think that's that is a significant part about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with Professor Lamas on this point. If I can add, comparing with the Great Depression period, what you see in the Great Depression was, I would say, inaction by the Federal Reserve Bank. Federal Reserve Bank didn't step in at the right time during the Depression period. Now, compare that with what's happening today. The Federal Reserve Bank is playing a much more proactive role. pumping money into the system, looking at various type of reforms in the financial market. That, I think, is what will keep us from having a very severe depression this time.
Thank you, John, very much for your call. Let's go next to Chuck from Winneconne. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, you?
Yeah, okay. Don't you think that Obama is doing this on purpose just to expose the Republicans that really don't want to get with the program, that don't want to help out Jeff Sessions, Arlen Specter, Lindsey Graham? All those people have talked against this stimulus package. Do you think that maybe that Obama is trying to expose them for the 2010 election?
I think that's, you know, a backdrop to this. We have to always remember that there will be another election, and the parties are constantly thinking about that and jockeying for position. But I think he's much more focused on what this is going to do for the nation's economy, as everyone agrees, in very dire straits. And by the way, you threw Arlen Specter in there, but of course he's one of the three Republicans in the Senate who are making this compromise possible. So I think, you know, you certainly hit on a good point, but I think partisan politics will not be the thing uppermost in President Obama's mind, but it'll be there to some extent.
Mm-hmm. Our number is 800-486-8655, and you're listening to All Things Political here on the Ideas Network. A reminder, we will be carrying the president's address to the country starting at 7 o'clock tonight. National Public Radio coverage will begin at 7. We go next to Mike from Appleton. Hello, Mike.
Yeah, good morning.
Hi.
I'm going to come at this from my perspective. I'm a small business owner. I employ people. Their livelihood depends on my decision. And the problem, and, you know, I represent probably millions of small business owners who have the same line of thinking as I do.
Mm-hmm.
I have a total lack of confidence. I have no confidence in the politicians. I'm extremely skeptical of all of the, you know, all of the economists who are out there talking about this problem. And I really don't think they know what they're talking about. I mean, nobody really knows which way this is going to go. And so the problem with that is that since I have no confidence, then I'm not going to invest. I'm going to wait and see what happens, which is probably the worst thing that can happen, you know, when you multiply me times, you know, how many millions who think like me. It seems to me that what's happening is that we're in kind of like a pivot point. We've lost thousands and thousands and thousands of manufacturing jobs to overseas competition, and they're not coming back, and we have to accept that reality. We've also lost, you know, thousands and thousands of millions of dollars in all of these bubbles. You know, there was a computer bubble, the housing bubble, all of these bubbles, and then all of these people who manage our economy making, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in bonuses and things like that. So I'm the small guy, but I'm the guy who employs a lot of people, and their livelihood depends on my decisions, and I have absolutely no confidence.
Well, what would you like the government to do?
Well, if you're a small business owner and you're in troubled times, you cut back on the spending. You cut it down to the bones. You try to, you know, keep as many people employed as you can, but you cut costs like crazy, and you try to increase your sales. You mm-hmm. don't go the other route.
Professor Chowdhury, you want to start?
Yes. In fact, that's the point I was trying to focus on at the beginning of the hour, that consumers, including small business, they're basically taking this wait-and-see approach, which in turn is having an adverse effect on the economy. Consumers are not spending. As a result, manufacturers are not selling their product. So they're hiring less and less people. So you have this cycle that we are in right now. So the question is, what needs to be done? Doing nothing is not an option at this point. So if the consumers are not spending because of the low consumer confidence, you do need the government to step in. And this is where I think the stimulus package will play a positive role.
Thank you, Mike, very much for the call. Professor Lamas, you want to respond?
I'm sorry, could I add something to that?
Oh, of course, yes.
Yes. No, I thought, you know, the small business owner caller really did a lovely job of summarizing the whole picture and the serious problems we face. And what and I'm not, you know, in the business of giving advice to President Obama, who's smart enough and knows his business, but I would say that I think there are a lot of people like him out there who want to be talked to in a understandable, straightforward way about all of these complex problems, how they are interacting, the bubble on Wall Street, the crash there, the housing market, the globalization effect, the loss of jobs, and so forth. And that's one thing that Franklin Roosevelt did very well in his term. He went on the airwaves with those fireside chats, and he spoke in an understandable way to people about these complex problems.
Mm-hmm.
Those they're in the public record. They can be accessed a lot of ways. In fact, there's an archive at University of California, Santa Barbara, that has every one of his fireside chats available online, So if you want to listen to him. But I think President Obama needs to make that connection. He speaks a lot, of course. He's been seen in a number of forums. He's going to have this press conference, but it's not quite the same thing as talking for a good 30 minutes, 45 minutes, and tying it all together and making what he's doing clear. And that might bring back that confidence, or take us a ways, toward bringing back that confidence that the caller talked about.
Mm-hmm. Thus, that could be one of the reasons he's going to Indiana, going to Florida, and giving a press conference, right?
Right. But, as I've seen and watched him closely on television over these less than 3 weeks, I'm wondering what message is getting out to people who aren't quite as attentive as political scientists and economists are in following this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's got to be coming at people in spurts on the nightly news or in NPR newscasts and other things and in the newspapers, but is it being pulled together well for
right.
them so that they,
right.
they see it clearly and see where he's taking us.
Right, and I think he kind of dropped the ball here for a while. He seemed to go in a different kind of mode that was reminiscent of when he wasn't center and front on the campaign trail for a while, at a time when he needed to be very forceful and doing exactly what you said. He seemed to wait for a little bit, and he caught his message again last week in a forceful way, which I think makes a difference.
Yeah, I mean, of course, to give him credit, of course, he's been very busy behind the scenes, structuring
right.
the government, dealing with not just these economic problems that we're talking about, but dealing with Iraq and Afghanistan and Iran's nuclear threat and who knows what else we're not being told about. So I think he's doing fine. I would just like to see 6 months from now to be able to say that I understand that President Obama has explained to me and to that small business owner
right.
and others exactly what's being done mm-hmm. on a bunch of fronts to bring back confidence.
Right. Point well taken. Let's go next to John from Watertown. Hi, John.
Yeah, the problem is mad dog unbridled capitalism, and you must think about that C word and say it every 3 seconds. It's that serious. You must quit being zany free market apologists to a dirty, corrupt, obsolete system. The brutal capitalistic system must be radically overhauled.
All right, John, what do you think of that, Professor Chaudhary? Let's put something else in its place.
Yeah, I think the current situation has raised to a number of legitimate concerns among people regarding, the current system and what needs to be done to correct the system. Now, opinions vary from one extreme to another, but I think this is the debate that needs to be addressed, this debate with the current system that we have.
I agree, too, that there's serious problems that have been brought out. But we have to, recognize that this free enterprise system has given our country and other countries enormous wealth. I mean, we don't want the government trying to make these minute decisions that have to be made every day about production and distribution. I mean, this is the free enterprise system is a great mechanism, but it has to be regulated. That's for sure.
Yeah, let's move for just a moment before we go back to phone calls. There's so many things going on. It's unbelievable. Tomorrow, we have a financial plan that the Treasury Secretary, Timothy Geithner, will be detailing. If you're getting through one plan and you go to another plan, how the administration intends to loosen credit by using the unspent money in the $700 billion bailout fund for banks and other financial institutions. We don't know what's going to happen with that, but we hear that, you thought we had a debate on the stimulus package. Wait till we get till tomorrow. Is that true, Professor Chaudhary? Is there going to be, I don't know what it's going to be. What do you think it should be, and will there be a lot of debating about it?
Basically, there will be a lot of discussion. Now, from what we are hearing at this point, we don't know the final details, but from what we are hearing at this point, Geithner will be suggesting a public-private partnership bank for buying the toxic securities from banks. Now, that would be a sort of a deviation from what we had been hearing from Washington for the last couple of months. And I think the Wall Street and the financial market will take that positively because there will be private participation in the process. And I think that is also good news for the U.S. taxpayers. They don't have to bear all the burden, all the costs of the bailout. So that, I think, would be a good thing if the public-private partnership thing works out.
Professor Lamas?
I'm grappling with the details like every other non-economist, and I just hope they know what they're doing.
That's a good point. I hope so, too. More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655. It's All Things Political here on the Ideas Network. Our guests are Professor Abdur Chaudhary. He's a professor of economics at Marquette University and chief economist at Capital Market Consultants. Professor Alexander Lamas is associate professor of political science at Case Western Reserve University. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, the future of nuclear power in this country and all over the world. 800-486-8655. Let's go to an email here and direct this first one to you, Professor Chaudhary. Before any more money is released, should the banks be required to lower interest rates on credit cards, loans, mortgages, etc., to a manageable rate and cap it permanently at, say, 10%?
In terms of the specific number, 10%, I'm not sure that will happen. But yes, I do see a movement towards lowering the interest rates. In fact, if you look at the Federal Reserve Bank, what I expect the Federal Reserve Bank to do in the next couple of months is start buying Treasury securities. Once they start doing that, that will lower long-term interest rates. The idea is that eventually that will lower the mortgage rate. Now, if you look at the mortgage rate currently, it's between 5.5%. The government wants to bring it down to around 4.5%. So I expect the Federal Reserve Bank to start buying long-term securities to make that happen. In terms of the credit card companies trying to cap their interest rates, I do see a movement in that direction, but I don't think the government will regulate interest rate to 10%. Interest rates will be higher, but there will be a movement to lower it from the current 20% level that we see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Michael is next from Milwaukee. Hello, Michael.
Morning. A couple of things. I keep hearing about the stimulus package, and I'll tell you what, you just keep seeing Washington doing the same old tricks, you know, petty bickering, politicking, you know, posturing. It doesn't seem like they're going to get us anywhere, but the whole thing is, I don't think that whatever, or a lot of people, too, don't think that any stimulus package is going to get us out of this mess that we got into. I lost my good-paying job about 8 years ago, a manufacturing job, and as myself and a lot of my friends and people all over the place were losing these good-paying jobs, we said to ourselves, who's going to be buying the product when people don't make money?
Sure.
Everybody was supposed to be working for $8 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were told, well, the standard of living is going up throughout the rest of the world. Of course, ours had to go down. Ours couldn't keep going up, too, and as they were getting our jobs. And that situation or that realization never was faced. Our economy was really sick for years. It was masked by the housing bubble. People were spending money that they didn't have. People that had money in 401ks, not 401ks, but in the market and in housing. They took this money out and spent it. That buoyed the economy. It put off the crash that finally occurred. And one more. You know, we used to drive around, and we used to see these big houses all over the place. My wife and I would comment and say, who the heck can afford to buy these big monster houses?
Mm-hmm.
And as it turned out, the people that were buying them couldn't afford to buy them either. I know I couldn't afford it, and most people I knew couldn't. And one more thing in our economy that has to be dealt with before we can even hope to rescue it is our failed health care system, which is dragging the whole economy down because we cannot afford the health care system that we presently have. And until those major issues are fixed and we face the realization that our standard of living is and our children's standard of living is going to go down, we're not going to get out of this.
Well, I think all those are excellent points that you've made, but you ought to realize that the government is responding. Our democracy is working. It is messy, but all these problems are being addressed. The stimulus package first, tomorrow, as we said, the whole credit crisis, and then health care is clearly a top priority of the Obama administration and the fine minds in that economic planning council that he has assembled is going to be looking at competitiveness down the road, how we survive in this global transformation and all of these things. So I think it's, let's all just sit tight and watch it unfold. And I think it's working the way it should work.
It's just there's so much, isn't there, Professor Labus? There's
well,
so much.
You know, we're living in exciting times and stressful times as a result. I think we've constantly made references back to the Depression, and we know, the hard times that we're having now aren't as bad as it was in 1933 and 34. We don't have 25% unemployment. We do have a safety net in place that didn't exist then, unemployment insurance. Extensive unemployment insurance, government help with health care, Social Security, a whole bunch of these things are there, and they come out of that transformation that occurred then when the government did respond.
Mm-hmm.
And the government, between then and now, there have been other responses on a host of issues that we've done well. We fought the Cold War and we've won. And you name it. I mean, we have a. I hate to be a continual optimist, but we have a lot of things to be proud of in this country, and we do respond to big challenges, and we've got those now.
And we need optimists. We really do.
And I think President Obama's an optimist.
Yeah, Jeff from Madison. Hi.
Hi, Professor. You really made me smile when you talked about high speed rail as a creator of jobs. For the living example that we could look at, the nation of India has a national railroad system, and it has 6 million jobs. Now, I don't suggest we could do the same, but we could sure as hell do better than we've been doing with road building and other stupidities. The second thing that would help, and this would probably come in what you were talking about in the Rooseveltian sense, we could probably make 15, 20, 25 million jobs, or maybe more, for a quarter of a century or maybe more, simply retrofitting the country for modern power, utilizing thermal and sun power and on and on, and the kinds of power that don't pollute and that can be sent around without the disaster of pipelines. Now, all of this can only happen somehow. The people in the country have got to wake up because you're going to face enormous resistance from big auto and big oil and big pharma, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the first part of the job, I think, for the intellectuals is to pick up on Naomi Klein's notion of the shock doctrine, and that is that globalization has been an alleged free trade has been an absolute disaster for people's economy, for feeding folks, and for the crushing of democracy. So we got a lot of work ahead of us, and people best tune into their radio and move away from their telly, because the telly is simply an instrument of brainwashing.
Professor Chowdhury.
I think the caller has made some good points. One thing that I don't agree with him is on the issue of globalization. I do not think globalization has created a lot of problem for this country. I think globalization has also brought a lot of advantages to this country. Now, obviously, in the short run, it has affected some people, but it has also positively affected others in the long run. So I see globalization issue a little bit differently than the caller.
Thank you, Jeff, very much for your call. Let's go to Matt from Lake Geneva. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Early in the conversation, The Economist was talking about, there are two points I want to address, this question of consumer confidence and the idea that there's market failure. You know, we heard that a lot from a lot of callers and a lot of people, that the capitalist system's to blame. The first idea was consumer confidence, raised by The Economist early on, that consumers are sitting by the sidelines and they don't have confidence to jump back in and start spending. I hate this idea. Consumers are tapped out. They've lived under this this bubble economy where they've been spending too much money. They have no savings. Their credit lines are maxed out. And the idea that we're going to get them back in soon to start spending again is a crazy idea. And secondly, this idea that market failure is to blame, that the capitalist system is to blame. We don't have a free market system in credit and money. And that's really the key here. That's where things have all gone wrong. We've been living, you know, in the tech bubble, the 2000 millennium crisis, the after 9/11, huge injections of fiat money, and then more and more fiat money that fueled the housing bubble. I mean, these are not things that are part of capitalism. These are problems that are part of this government-run economic system that we have.
Professor Lamas, you want to take that one?
Well, I wouldn't say government run, but certainly government regulated in many ways, and including, of course, the capital markets. No, I think those are all, you know, all good points, and it comes right back to this confidence issue, and I know the caller is pessimistic that confidence will be there, and for good reason, that people don't have the money and the resources. That's it for me on that.
Yeah, the lack of consumer confidence has been one of the main problems that we see in the economy. Now, I agree with the caller that, you know, as a nation, we don't save as much as, let's say, many other nations do. The Japanese, they save more than 20% of their income. We don't do that. But here I want to differentiate between the short run and the long run situation. In the long run, obviously, we do need our savings rate to go up as a nation. However, in the short run, given the problem that we are in right now, spending has to increase. Since it's not coming from the consumer because of the lack of confidence that they have, that's where we are asking the government to step in. So I think we need to differentiate between the short run and the long run situation here.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Mike from Portage next. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I have an idea, and I'd like somebody to shoot holes in it. They're talking about the troubled assets, and I heard that they were, some of these bundles of mortgages were being sold for 20 to 25 cents on the dollar. I also heard that they ran a test situation of kind of a reverse auction for banks to sell bundles of mortgages if somebody bought them at the lowest price. Say you bought $100 billion worth of face value mortgages for 25 cents on the dollar, $25 million, and then rewrote them to, even if you rewrote them at, say, like half their original face value, which would be a tremendous boon for the mortgage holder, at, say, 6% interest, and then you had maybe $10 million worth of cost to get all this done, you'd have mortgages that were originally worth $100 million worth $50 million. And if you bundled them up, you should be able to get damn near $50 million.
All right, I need to hold you there. We only have about 20 seconds left. If you could take this on, Professor Chaudhary, in that amount of time.
In fact, that was the initial intention of the TARP bill, that the government will buy these mortgages, mortgage-based securities, the toxic securities, and then hold on to them till the market recover, and then they will sell it at a higher price. Then they moved away from that. Now, the bill that will come out tomorrow will have some provision of private-public partnership where they plan to, you know, buy some of these bad assets or toxic assets. Mm. And then, you know, at some future point in time, as the economy improves, sell it at a higher price, as the caller suggested.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mike, for the call. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us this hour. Deep interest in the topic, and I appreciate your time. Thanks.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Professor Abdur Chowdhury, he's at Marquette University, professor of economics, and Professor Alexander Lamas, associate professor of political science at Case Western Reserve University. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, Rob Schroeder for on-air production in our studios in Milwaukee, and thanks for all of your calls. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return with more Monday Conversation here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.